is United States versus Hernandez-Reyes.
May it please the Court, I'm Morris Berman. I'm appointed to represent Mr. Hernandez-Rivas on this appeal. Mr. Hernandez-Rivas is serving a 175-month sentencing for cocaine conspiracy, money laundering, and structuring offenses, a case that was tried in the Eastern District of Wisconsin. It really comes before this Court in a way by virtue of a 2255 motion granted by the District Court, given that Mr. Hernandez-Rivas is counsel who conducted the trial didn't file a timely notice of appeal. And his primary challenge in this direct appeal is to the admission of evidence seized in a warrantless search of his person that was conducted in the course of a warrantless stop of a Plymouth Neon on September 15, 2000. Mr. Hernandez-Rivas was a passenger in that vehicle. He was subjected to being detained, a Terry pat down, and a search.
I have a elevating question. At the time of the discussion with the driver, where was your client?
As best the record reflects, as I recall, he was already outside of the car, because I believe Deputy Mulholland said that Mr. Hernandez-Rivas
was he within earshot of the whole thing?
I don't believe the record reflects which deputy. There were two deputies.
I'm talking about the conversation at the car, and you're complaining about the admission of the evidence of statement made by the driver.
No, we are complaining about the admission of physical evidence seized from Mr. Hernandez-Rivas.
Yes, but you aren't talking about the hearsay introduction of the deputy who made the arrest.
Oh, right. We are complaining about that.
Where was your client at the time of that conversation?
I don't believe the exact footage is clear in the he was nearby.
Uh-huh.
He was certainly nearby. He had emerged from the Plymouth, and
all of this is in one small area of what we're talking about.
Fairly small area. Apparently he was walking back toward Deputy Mulholland, so somewhere in between the squad car and the vehicle that had been stopped, but the exact number of feet I don't think was ever elaborated in either the trial record or the suppression hearing. Getting back to the Terry stop, first we're contending that there was no valid stop of the vehicle. There's no speeding ticket written, although that was the ostensible reason for the stop. There was no radar. In fact, the report of the one deputy who authored a report didn't even indicate that this vehicle was speeding. And there's not even an indication that either one of the deputies had resort to the Wisconsin catch-all statute, which doesn't require a certain amount of miles over the legal limit of unreasonable and imprudent speed. But even if the court finds no clear error in the decision below that the Plymouth was speeding some 5 miles over the limit, the pat-down requires additional information, and a pat-down of Mr. Hernandez-Rivas as a passenger can't be justified under the sort of Atwater line of cases. A pat-down requires a reasonable suspicion of criminal activity by him, and above and beyond that, a reasonable belief that he presently was armed and presented a danger to the officer or others. There's no per se rule, simply that this was a drug case, that therefore a pat-down is allowed. There has to be something particularized as to Mr. Hernandez-Rivas. Now, as to the reasonable suspicion of criminal activity, I believe it was Deputy Kilton and or Mulholland testified that they thought the occupants of this Neon were going to Mexico. That's not illegal, that they were carrying an amount of money, and or that this Carlos, also known as Mr. Luna, was purchasing cashier's checks. That in and of itself is not illegal. But going
to... Were
there
45 caliber bullets in the console?
Those were found in the console in the search of in the Neon. That was a search conducted by the other deputy. But there was
What time frame Was this prior to the pat down, or was this?
Well, it was conducted by the other deputy. It was contemporaneous, but probably just about the same time or slightly before. Although there was no evidence that Deputy Mulholland, who was dealing with Mr. Hernandez-Rivas, was privy to that, knew that, or that I don't believe there's any evidence Deputy Kilton communicated that to Deputy Mulholland, who was dealing with Mr. Hernandez-Rivas. And actually, Deputy Mulholland didn't evidence any particular indicia of fear that Mr. Hernandez-Rivas was armed and dangerous. The initial encounter, Mr. Hernandez-Rivas had already gotten out of the vehicle, was walking back toward Mulholland. Mulholland didn't say that he was menacing, that he was acting in a belligerent or threatening way. He didn't draw his gun, or either of the deputies didn't draw their gun, which they could have, consistent with the case law on a detention, if they really consider it a high-risk detention. And that wouldn't have necessarily converted into an arrest requiring probable cause. So he didn't evidence any particular fear of him. According to the testimony at the suppression hearing, didn't handcuff him immediately. But instead, he conducted the pat-down. Mr. Hernandez-Rivas is also contending that the pat-down went beyond the limits of what is allowed in Terry, if this pat-down is even permissible. He patted him down. He felt something in his jacket pocket, which he never testified. This is Mulholland, never testified. He thought it was a weapon. It felt like a square object. It turned out to be currency.
I thought he said he had $10,000 before it was even removed.
I'm sorry?
I thought he said that money, that I got $10,000 before.
Well, and what's curious about that is Mulholland asked him, what is that? And Hernandez-Rivas says 10, Mulholland says 10 what? Hernandez-Rivas says 10,000. Why he is asking that is pretty curious, since he also says that he was able to see currency inside this jacket pocket of Hernandez-Rivas. So why he's asking him what it is sort of curious, if not a little implausible. But he knows it isn't a weapon. He knows that it's currency. That in and of itself isn't illegal. And carrying currency is not necessarily contraband. But he seizes it. He seizes it as evidence. Recall that Kilton testified that one of the reasons they wanted to stop this vehicle and were ordered to stop this vehicle is that they were afraid that evidence would be lost. But Terry doesn't allow a search for evidence. It's only a search to make sure that the officer and others in the vicinity are safe from weapons. It's not to be a search for weapons. There's a search that goes beyond that, which is a retrieving of Mr. Hernandez-Rivas' wallet. I think it's rather clear that goes well beyond what's permitted in Terry. There's some other issues in the case. As Judge Bauer indicated, there's some issues regarding some hearsay that was admitted. But the primary issue goes to this warrantless detention and search, and we urge the court to reverse the lower court's decision on that. Unless the court has any further questions, I'll reserve the balance of my time.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you. Ms. Jacobs?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Michelle Jacobs for the United States. I'm going to start, Judge Bauer, by answering your question just to make the record as clear as I can about where everybody was during the traffic stop. At page 206 of the trial record, Officer or Deputy Mulholland testified that when Mr. Hernandez-Rivas stepped out of the car, he asked him to step to the rear of the vehicle. And as best I can tell from the record, that appears to be where they were, because Officer Kilton also testified that he stepped to the driver's side, talked to the driver, and eventually asked the driver for consent, and testified that while he was searching, Mulholland was back toward the squad car. So, again, it's not entirely clear, but I think the record is fairly clear that he was standing between the rear of the Neon and the deputy's squad car. And actually, just for the record, Officer Kilton's testimony on that point is at pages 186 to 189 of the trial record.
Thank you.
As I indicated in the government's brief, I think the first hurdle that the defendant is required to overcome, and I don't think, based on the briefs and even the argument here this morning, that it has been overcome, is the waiver issue. Counsel did not object to the magistrate judge's recommendation on the motion to suppress, nor did he object during the trial to the admission of this evidence. And this court's decisions on this point, I think, are clear.
But it's very well covered in your brief, I think.
Right. And so I would submit that the Fourth Amendment issue has been waived, and the conviction and sentence in the case should be affirmed on this point. If the court has any questions on the hearsay issues, I would be happy to answer those. Otherwise, I would rest on my brief and ask that the conviction be affirmed.
I would assume you prefer a decision that would say that the search is okay, so you don't have an ineffective assistance of counsel petition next week.
That's true.
That'll be the next claim.
That's true, although I would also, as we argue in our brief, I think he's going to have a hard time making that claim given this court's decision.
Well, certainly we work against you on the waiver. What have you got to say about the arrest itself?
Could you just repeat the question? I'm sorry.
I'm assuming we rule against you on the question of waiver. Why not respond to the arrest itself? Complaints about the arrest.
Well, I'm happy to respond to all of those here today, and I do in my brief. First of all, the stop of the vehicle is clearly justified based on the fact that the vehicle is...
So you're not relying on waiver, you're also...
Absolutely not, and we've addressed the merits of all of the...
I think that was Judge Evans' question. If you want to stand on the waiver, that's one thing. If you want to say that the whole... everything was appropriate, then that's a different ballgame altogether.
Yes, and we do believe, and I think I've set forth in the brief, that I believe that all of the steps taken and all of the issues that have been raised by the defendant on the Fourth Amendment claim... are easily overcome by the government. The pat-down search based on the wiretap evidence, the evidence of the defendant's gun possession, the fact that he consented to the removal of his wallet. It's very clear in the trial transcript at page 207 that Mulholland asked him if he could take his wallet out, and he said yes. And so as I've argued in my brief, unless the court has questions, we believe that on the merits, the Fourth Amendment issue is appropriately decided. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Berman.
On the waiver issue, I was certainly rather discomfited to see that there was no objection to the report and recommendation by predecessor counsel. But this court has never held that waiver rule to be jurisdictional, beginning in Video Views versus Studio 21, and more recently in United States versus Brown at 79 Fed Third 1499. I think the Vass Brown case, the one at 79 Fed Third, is somewhat instructive in that case. The appellant Brown challenged his lawyer as ineffective for failing to do certain things and being ineffectual in his defense. If the court looks at this case, there was unfortunately a recurring pattern of trial counsel failing to follow the procedural steps that would perfect various rights without any question of waiver. But under Video Views versus Studio 21, that is a waiver rule which is not jurisdictional. Going to the issue of the consent, that was not a particular fact before the magistrate judge, so he didn't have that extra bit of evidence before it that Hernandez-Rivas reportedly consented to having the wallet taken. Because of that, the issue of whether or not that consent was or could be deemed consensual or non-consensual, given that he was, as we argue, unlawfully detained, was also not litigated. So I suggest that does not settle the issue of whether the seizure of the wallet and examination of the documents therein violated the Fourth Amendment. It would have to be remanded for additional fact-finding on that issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Berman. You were appointed in this case?
I was, Your Honor.
Thank you very much for taking the case and your vigorous representation of your client. The case will be taken under advisement.